And we're on the phone with Amy Yerstadt from the League of Women Voters. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning. Good morning.
We were just comparing notes about Thanksgiving, but your Thanksgiving was good?
It was great. Yep, nice and quiet, and I think everybody got their fill, and yep, we were good.
Good. Are your kids picky eaters?
They cannot be, because I'm a vegetarian, so they have to eat what is in front of them.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah, so, no, they were quite thrilled, so it was good. If I remember correctly, I think we even went for a impromptu turkey trot beforehand, so they were nice and hungry before we ate.
Excellent, very good. Well, the last time we talked, it was pre-election, now it's post-election, and still a lot's happening with the whole the election, so.
Yeah, there's there's a lot of news to catch up on, right? So Michigan is done, certified, everything is good. I guess to catch up for our community, just to let you know that we did have league members at Board of Canvasser meetings in all three counties in the Eastern Upper Peninsula watching the counts get officiated at the county level, so at Lewis, Mackinac, and Chippewa. And that was the first time we had done that, and it was coordinated by the state League of Women Voters, so the League of Women Voters of Michigan. So they were, they wanted to make sure that all of the communities across Michigan understood and trusted the process. And so they made sure that their members and volunteers were in the rooms as those counts were delivered and as the canvassers would go through and check the tape, which is basically that's the tape that comes out of the machines when at the end of the night from everybody's votes. And then I sat in Chippewa County Courthouse watching our local Board of Canvassers, and I have to say it was really interesting, and it was pleasantly boring, which is wonderful thing. You want to hear that.
Right.
And we have, if you're unfamiliar, which I don't know if everybody's unfamiliar anymore now that it's been so much news around how the process in Michigan works, but there's two Republicans, two Democrats. They're appointed by the your county board. And I remember actually being at one of the county board meetings and seeing some of these folks getting appointed. So I feel like I really have been at the very beginning of the process and then watched all the way to the end, thanks to League. And so watching them, they were civil. They were professional. They were polite to one another. They wore their masks. Like, it was just a really, like, Chippewa County really, we do a wonderful job when it comes to the election stuff. And then I heard the similar from my colleagues in the other counties. I think it was loose, it was a little tight, it was a little small when they had to actually do the count. And I think they weren't expecting league members to be in the room watching it. But even still, the staff, the board members were really kind and professional. And so hats off to everybody who stewards our elections and makes sure that, you know, democracy prevails. And it's amazing is that Michigan, it's unlike many states in the union, and that we have to be able to account for every ballot. So while there might be some clerical or some machine mix-ups or whatever, like for one or two ballots, like even those one or two ballots, the Board of Canvassers has to know exactly what happened. And that's just that's a very unique Michigan thing. So other states might be like you have a certain percentage of error that you're allowed to have, so like that cushion. Mm-hmm. Michigan's not like that. And so it was really surprising that it got so political when our system is so tight. Sure, there could probably be some updates because things do move pretty slow. They're not really harnessing technology maybe perhaps that we could. But, you know, in some ways, someone might argue that that actually makes it potentially more secure. I don't know. I guess I'd want to see more research on both sides. But watching it at the county level, which is really where everything gets officiated, is at these boards of canvassers, it really was a phenomenal. And those board members worked their tails off because they had to come in several days because of all the different precincts. You know, they'd have a hiccup here, like there's two ballots here. Why do we have, you know, it's not the same number that was in the poll book or vice versa. And so they'd have to call back the election workers, and they'd have to run it through the machine to better understand what exactly happened to those one or two ballots. And so, I mean, it's phenomenal how much they work, trying to get accurate count, trying to make sure they understand exactly what happened to every single person's ballot. I hats off to Michigan. We did a fantastic job collectively as a state, I would say. And then to the next level after the board, your county board officiates their numbers, then those get sent up to the state board. And so we also, as the state league and all of the local league members, we all watched, and some were, we were all sitting there on the Zoom because everything's virtual, mm-hmm. and people could put in comments if they wanted to. So I put a comment in as well, talking about how, you know, my observations at the local level. And then, you know, other organizations will do the same. And so we watched the state board of canvassers bring in and check and ask, you know, various election precinct clerks and whatnot, you know, what happened, why, you know, especially in Detroit, that was the one that everybody was seeming to pay more attention to. And so, yeah, it was a fascinating process to watch. It really, from very start to beginning, from appointing our board of canvassers all the way to getting it to the state board of canvassers. So if no one here on the call have seen this before, this process play out, I highly recommend it. It will give you a lot more trust in the process. Like, you'll understand exactly every step of the way. I volunteered as a challenger as well for another organization on election day. So I was there before the polls opened, and I stayed there till after the polls closed all day long to watch and see that process. And as a military person, since I do vote every time I move, I register in that new state. So mm-hmm. I've seen California, Oregon, Virginia, and Michigan. I really wanted to be able to compare and learn more about the process. Not to mention, I also, when I teach political science to my students, I like to talk about the different processes in every state. And so it was also interesting to watch, the more nuanced ways how Election Day works. And so it's wonderful. It really, really is wonderful. People should come and check it out.
So, and Amy, you did have also, the league had observers at the polls when people were coming in voting too, right?
We actually, locally, we did not.
Oh, okay.
What it was is that those members wanted to, so the difference with the observer versus a challenger, if folks don't know, and challenger is actually not a great word. I really don't like that word for mm-hmm. election day stuff, but that's what the state calls it. So an observer can't be anywhere near that poll book and can't sit behind, where the poll workers are doing their magic. They have to sit out where more of the public is at. And so they can't really learn like some of the nuanced stuff. You can't hear. And especially right now with COVID and everything else, it's not the best place to like have a good view of the process. You don't have nearly as many rights, I would say, as opposed to a challenger, which you can only do with the party. So your party has to get credentialed. So there's a whole process for this credentialing. And depending on the party, you go through a training to understand what it is, like what the rules are as a person who is going to be in the room. And so then once you get through that training, you get your credential, they reach out to your clerk. And then so the clerk should know exactly who will be there, what parties are going to be there. And then the challenger gets to actually see the poll book. And they just can't touch the poll book. They can't talk to the voters. But they can talk to the election workers, and, you know, they're more considered, I like to consider them more like problem solvers.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes these folks have been doing this for years or even decades, these challenger folks. And so they know the election system very, very well. And, so sometimes you have election workers who haven't, you know, maybe it's their first time working the election and they're not quite sure how, you know, what happens. Like someone brought in an absentee ballot. What do I do now? Because they want to vote in person. And so sometimes those challengers actually know the process really well. And so they can tell and talk to the poll worker and say, hey, you know, this might be this time when you do this. And then, and so it can actually be quite a great working relationship. But yeah, the difference with the challenger versus the observer is the challenger has a little more leeway and they can talk to the election workers. They can see the poll book to compare notes. They can sit closer to where everything's actually happening, as opposed to an observer has to be way far away. They can't. They literally are just like a fly on a wall and don't have a great advantage of view.
Hmm.
So we didn't have any league observers this time around because I think people just wanted to be closer to the action.
Sure. So, so obviously, you know, there's been a lot of, back and forth, since, the election about, the results and stuff. But I, beyond that, The one thing that I guess I've learned, you know, in watching all this kind of develop over the past month is the difference, like you kind of alluded to a little bit, of election processes in each different state.
Right.
And
yeah.
I guess my question does some of those irregularities or different styles of doing polling in different states, does that almost make you feel like maybe things should be standardized across the United States a little bit more so that there's more consistency from state to state?
I don't know. I guess if it was going to be standard, I would want it to be the standard in that it's the way that allows the most people who are eligible to vote to
sure.
vote.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sometimes when we say we should have it standard, some folks might think of in a way to prevent people from voting. So I guess I would want to see, well, what does the standardization mean? Do we have the most secure technology? That's the other thing, is that having a decentralized system that might be a little different from everywhere else is one, is that this is, you know, this is how federalism in our country works in democracy, and that we can experiment locally and then just see if it works or not. And if it completely bombs, thankfully, we didn't have the whole country adopt that. And so
right.
in some ways, I think the system that we have is good. Not to mention with security nowadays and technology, you know, if you had a system that is more connected than what it is today, and we were all in the same, you know, like say we're all in the same poll book design, and some hacker got in there, like it would not be very good.
Sure.
So in some ways it's good that we don't all look alike, but it does make it a little bit more confusing, especially for like us, my family who's military. We every single time we have to learn the election laws, you know, what kind of ID, you know, when is the too late to come and register to vote? You know, can you do early voting or not? You know, just different things, you know, what your residency is and how long you have to have been there. And so in some ways it would be a little easier, or maybe the government would just do a better job sometimes in various states of doing a public education campaign about voting and how it works. Because when you think mm-hmm. about it, most of us, when we're in school, we don't learn anything about how the electoral process works when you're in high school.
Right.
So that potentially could fix a lot of issues if we just had civics education that made more sense when it was relevant to students. So oftentimes, I think even in Michigan, our students are learning about a little bit about the electoral process, maybe more generally about American government when they're a sophomore. They're not even eligible to vote yet.
Right.
And so voting and American government really doesn't resonate with them because they can't participate in a really, you know, in a truly meaningful way. And so perhaps if, you know, maybe Michigan decided to change that portion of the curriculum to maybe closer to their senior year, and then they actually took the students through the poll process, you know, showed them what a poll book looks like, showed them what the machine that take, you know, the tabulator looks like, took them to a board of canvassers meeting so that everybody could understand what this process is. And then we collectively could come up with maybe solutions if we see some, you know, need for improvement. But right now, I think, as you know, that's when we learn about government is at high school, and unfortunately, it just doesn't match up.
Mm-hmm.
And that would probably be the single best way for, I think, our communities to better understand, have faith and trust in the system, is if they learned about it. And that sometimes takes a hands-on opportunity. And so, since high school is not doing it, that's why I always recommend people join the League of Women Voters, join your political parties. Because these are the entities that do allow hands-on learning so that you can get up close and personal to see the electoral process and have faith in it and then see where you might want to have improvement.
We're talking to Amy Ehrstadt from the League of Women Voters. Amy, the other thing I've heard people say in the news and everything is that it's time to abolish the Electoral College.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's obviously was put in place by the forefathers to, I guess you could probably explain it better than I am. I understand what it means, but what do you think about when people say that?
So the League of Women Voters does have a position on this, and we've had it for a long time. I want to say since the 70s, and they do believe in the popular vote. So the League of Women Voters does believe in abolishing the Electoral College and allowing voters to, you know, actually have their say. And that's really all I can, for the most part, I can say about it is that that's what democracy is. I can you know, go into the, some of the history about the Electoral College, I mean, it really was designed to help slave states have more power. This was a compromise with the southern states versus the northern states. When ratifying the Constitution, there was certain compromises that weren't going to happen and others that were. And this is, you know, a lot of these states were like, we're not going to sign. We're not going to allow this Constitution to happen unless we can have a little more pull. And this was one of them, was the Electoral College. So this really is, it is kind of, you know, baggage from a time when our country, you know, wasn't nearly as, diverse and accepting of people as it, you know, is now. So, and then the other issue is, I know some of the argument is, well, the big cities are going to take over, you know, they're the ones that are going to decide the votes. When that's not actually true. When you actually do a population count, the cities actually were only going to account for about 9% of the vote, which is not very much. So when people really start digging into it, it would be a much more fair, a fair calibration of what the people want would be the popular vote.
And there is some states, I know there's a couple of them that I saw that on election night, but that they split their electoral votes. They're like most of the states, I guess it's you win the state, you get all the electoral votes. And
right.
There's a couple of states, I guess, that split them. So.
Yep. Nebraska and Maine both have do that, which is an interesting way to try to make it a little more fair.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then you have places like, you know, like, was it Montana or Wyoming, where they get it, the bare minimum that the Constitution allows is 3 electoral votes. But really, when you actually were to look at the numbers, it doesn't make sense that they get the 3. And so even the math is not adding up anymore. The country has evolved so much, and populations have, you know, moved and changed. And
sure.
It's unfortunately, it's a, you know, my family, we're a big math family. We love math. And, the math right now is not adding up. When you can have about 20 or 22 states that have 90 electoral votes, but yet they have such a small proportion of the population, the math is not adding up.
Right.
And so, yeah. So, again, the League of Women Voters has had a position on this for a very long time. And they're, from what I understand, at the national level, they're going to be advocating stronger to end the Electoral College, to advocate for having a popular vote. So we'll see how that goes. You know, that's a long-term campaign. It's going to take a very long time, I think, to get enough people and consensus around the country to change that one. But in the meantime, it's an interesting thing to talk about for sure.
And what did you think about turnout? It seemed like there was an awful lot of people voting this year.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I think even Chippewa County had an extra, was it like 1,700 voters than we've had in the past? So, I saw when I was working, when I was volunteering the day of election day, I saw people in there who were in their 60s and said it was their first time they've ever voted.
Wow.
And so the election workers had to show them how, like, what a ballot is and how to use the ballot. I was just amazed.
That's amazing.
To see how many older folks who'd never voted before and they came out and voted. Because typically we talk about young people, but I swear I saw anywhere between 10 and 5 and 10 new older people vote for the first time. And so, yeah, it was an amazing election. That's all I can say. Yeah, there's a lot of new energy that we haven't seen. And they're saying that this was a historic vote. People hadn't turned out at this level around the country since 1908.
Right.
And in Lewis County, we had an observer, I think, down there possibly, or even just somebody who was watching the scoring, and they had said that Lewis County had the highest turnout proportion of people in the whole state, which is pretty cool. There's not
crazy.
Very many voters there,
right.
Like, I don't know, 12 or 1,700,
mm-hmm.
but they had like an 89% turnout,
wow.
which is, wow, that's mm-hmm. super impressive.
Yeah, it's crazy. Wow. So this year, this is our last interview in 2020, and this has obviously been mm-hmm. a historic year for the league, turning 100 this year. I remember when we talked about that back in February, we didn't know that we were going to be going through a pandemic in between uh-huh. then and now, but just talk a little bit about the league. I know you probably had other celebrations that you were going to do that got kind of put on hold, but as you guys get into the second 100 years of the league, what's coming up in the near future for the league?
Yeah, so locally we got a lot done, I have to say. Even with a pandemic, we are a small little group, you know, of people who just really want to make democracy work. And I feel like we accomplished way more than I would have anticipated with our small group during a pandemic. So we had our popular Vote 411 online. You know, we asked all the candidates questions. And working with you, thanks again for that. We had those two candidate forums, which were fantastic, helping people understand who the 107th candidates were, as well as who was running for Chippewa County. We watched these elections at the Board of Canvassers all throughout the county and then at the state level, which was amazing. We did our voter education, registration, mobilization. We were at the university doing it. We dropped off voter guides. That was one thing that we did that we took a risk on, and I think the risk paid off, is we ordered 5,000 newspaper voter guides, and then we also paid extra to have an insert put in so that we could cover the 107th and Chippewa County. And so we dropped off, like I personally dropped off 1,200 newspaper voter guides on people's doorsteps, trying to help that they would vote. And then we had covered races that people didn't know about, like the Board of Regents for state universities and others. So like information that doesn't get up this way, we had that in our voter guide. And so we were dropping that off at businesses, at places of worship, and at other organizations, and then in people's doorsteps. And so we had ordered, 5,000 of those. And then, of course, in the primary, we wrote over 2,000 postcards in Chippewa County, and a lot of first-time and young voters trying to make sure they know where to go for election information. We did a lot of advocacy. We had people, including myself and other members, watching these county-city meetings. Cloverland, we have someone in the room for every Cloverland board meeting, making sure that we have a presence and so that our local government knows that, you know, they're not the only ones who care about all of these issues.
Mm-hmm.
We did redistricting commission. Remember, we had a forum on that. We had folks in the room who were educating people about it. And then we also had had someone come in to do free notary and printing so that people could apply for the Citizens Redistricting Commission. And then, of course, if we have our FOIA lawsuit right now where the League of Women Voters and I are trying to get this use of force policy open and transparent for the community. And so that is ongoing litigation that we're working on. So moving into 2021, we are going to be, again, very ambitious this next coming year. And so one thing that we have observed is that there's not very many women who are running for office locally. And so we wanted to try to help new people who've never run and women run for office. So we're going to put on an Empower to Lead How to Run series. It's going to be virtual because of COVID, but I think it'll still be just as informational. We'll have guest speakers, people who have done it before, people who know a lot about it, and people who know how to organize. And fundraise. And so we're going to have that series. So if anyone is interested in how government works and how to run for office, we will be having that series coming up early in the year, probably close to February or so. And then it'll be several different episodes of that. We're also going to have a training on observing government. So for those folks who are interested in how government works, I think in order for you to really feel confident about running for government and wanting to be the change maker, you need to know how it works and what issues are being discussed. And so we're going to do a training on how to observe government as well. We're also interested in looking at redistricting of Chippewa County. So Chippewa County, because we did the census, we're moving on to the next phase. Chippewa County, like other counties across the state, are going to get redistricted because people have moved. Mm-hmm. And we currently have five members on the board, and so we used to have seven. And so the league is going to study, and we want to better understand the move, why it went from seven to five, and should it stay at this current level at five, or should we expand back to our seven? And so we're going to invite former and current Chippewa County board members, and then potentially we're going to also talk with those members who draw the lines to find out, you know, what their thinking is and what we need to do to move forward. So I think that's going to be a really fascinating local issue, is redistricting Chippewa County. And then lastly, and this is just for the local stuff because we still also have our state stuff to work on, but locally, we also recognize that there's a few times when we wanted people to be in the room. So like when the league turned 100 years old, we needed everybody to show up at the Chippewa County Courthouse at the county commission meeting. And so many people were emailing and texting us saying they don't know where the meeting is at. Mm-hmm. And I just couldn't believe that people didn't know where the meeting was at. And I was like, we need to help this situation out. So what we're going to do is we're going to create a They Represent Us guide. So just a trifold back and front where we have all of your local elected representatives and where they meet. And a handy guide that we will drop off at various businesses and the library and whatnot. So we're going to research and find out all of that information, especially now that we have the new candidates will be coming into office. So we'll have that information for people who want to get involved and follow the election. Local government board meetings. And we just recently put on a Google Calendar on our website so that you can find those meetings, because there was one point where I was trying to run out the door and catch the meeting, and then I didn't know if it was online or in person. If it was virtual or in person, and I was messaging people like, where's the meeting? I don't know. I can't find it on their website. Sometimes these are really hard to find on websites, especially those Zoom links. And so since I missed the meeting because I couldn't figure it out, I said, I'm going to create something so I'll never miss a meeting again. So right now we have a Google Calendar with all the Zoom and other information people might need to find those local meetings. But whatever we can do to help people get connected to government so that we are all working together and government is more transparent, that's really what the League is about. So I think at the state level, the state is asking us to also participate in a study about lame duck session for the legislature and or the governor. And so that'll be a really interesting conversation to dive into that issue and then to try to make a decision locally, which will collectively all the leagues across Michigan, which I think are 30 some leagues, will be coming together on that. And then it'll create a position at the state level where the state and local members will do lobbying, trying to whatever comes out of that consensus and that position. So that'll be also very, very fun. And then, of course, we also have our local election work, because next 2021 will be city commission meetings, city commission candidate forums again, and all of the get out the vote work again. So we have a long agenda. Like I said, it's very ambitious. But I think our next 2021 is really trying to get local and really help people learn and understand and be confident to participate in government, because we really do believe that a competition of ideas is makes government work better and makes democracy work. So that's kind of the goal coming into 2021.
So Amy, if anybody wants to maybe get involved in the new year with the League of Women Voters, how would they get in touch with you?
Thanks for asking. Absolutely. So they can message us on Facebook. So that would be at LWVEUP. They can email us, so that'd be lweveup@gmail.com. And they can also get in contact with us on our website, which is lweveup.org. So just same one all throughout, LWV, so League of Women Voters, EUP, which is Eastern Upper Peninsula. So just use the initials for all of that, LWVEUP.
And I would imagine there's a lot of people who maybe had their interest piqued here in this recent election cycle that maybe want to maybe participate. So I think you maybe see your membership grow a little bit here in the new year.
Gosh, I hope so. Mm-hmm. I hope so. We have our last 2020 meeting coming up this Friday. So kind of it's more of a celebratory. We're gonna bring your own, beverage on Zoom. and so if you would. If you would like to join our little Zoom just conversation and relaxation, reflecting on the past year, that'll be at 6:30 this Friday night, and we'll have the Zoom link will be on our website and Facebook at the end of by today. It'll definitely be on there today. So check that out. And we hope we see some new faces on those Zoom calls. That would be wonderful. And hopefully new faces running for office in 2021 and, making government work, working better.
Well, Amy, won't talk to you until after Christmas, so I hope you and your family have a Merry Christmas.
Thanks. You too. I hope you guys have a safe and a festive holiday. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much. And enjoy the day. And again, some great information there about the election, and appreciate always your insight into our civic duty of voting. So.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. It's been a wonderful, we've been hanging out every last Monday of the month. So thank you so much for allowing us this space. This has been wonderful.
Absolutely. We'll do it again in 2021 for sure.
Awesome. All right. Well, have a wonderful time.
All right. Thanks, Amy. We'll talk to you soon. Amy Yerset from the League of Women Voters joining us this morning here on 1230 WSOO.